I'm following Rav Zevin on his essay on Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And the last thing that we discussed, but we didn't get into it, is Rav Chaim's understanding of Pikuach Nefesh. And it's very interesting to note that, and Rav Chaim is not alone in this, but there are other Gdolim in that period of time. Rav Chaim took a very strong stand with regard to anything that was related to health and Pikuach Nefesh. So for example, you have page, what's the first page you have?
78.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I just hope I didn't mess up here. Just give me a minute here. I hope. Yeah, 78. That makes sense.
78 degrees.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, I ran out of paper because this article is endless. So I guess the first part, till we get to the grizz, I'll give you orally. I'll give you bal peh. Now, what happened was that it was a common question that came up in the poskim based on the Shulchan Aruch of how to feed a person on Yom Kippur who's ill and has to eat. And the Shulchan Aruch speaks about giving him small amounts spread out over a period of time. Like every 9 minutes you give him a little half of a kezias or less than a revius to drink. And Reb Chaim used to paskin that if a person has to eat, then let him eat. And he wasn't willing to accept those restrictions and those chumras. And when they asked him how could it be makil in such a way, so he said, I'm not being makil on the Isur Yom Kippur, I'm being machmir on Pikuach Nefesh. That was the famous statement of Reb Chaim. But then they would ask Reb Chaim, what about the Shulchan Aruch? The Shulchan Aruch itself says that you wait this 9 minutes, you know, it's called Kedeach Ilus Pras, you fit in Chatzi Shir, and after 9 minutes another Chatzi Shir. How can you go against the Shulchan Aruch? That's what they asked. So Reb Chaim used to try to push into the Shulchan Aruch his Shita. And he would say the following. The language of the Rambam and also the Shulchan Aruch is the following. Chole sheyesh bo sakana, osim lo kol tzrocha. Okay, if a person is a chole sheyesh bo sakana, you have to do whatever is necessary. And in the Rambam, which is in Perek Beis Hilchos Shabbos, the Magen Mishnah adds the following statement: Afilu she'ein b'menias davar she'osim lo sakon. Even if by withholding it, you won't lose the patient; he'll still survive. Nevertheless, you're allowed to give it to him, whatever he needs. That's called osim lo kol tzrocha. So Reb Chaim would ask: so how can the Shulchan Aruch paskin that if you have chole, that you have to feed him pachas mikashir, right? Because he'll survive even if you spread out pachas mikashir over this period of time of out, you know, beyond kedeach ilus pras. The Gemara doesn't have that kind of halacha in pikuach nefesh that a person is a chol sheyesh bo sakana, then you have to feed him pachas mikashir. Adrav, the Gemara says chol sheyesh bo sakana osim lo kol tzrocha. So why are you telling me that we're going to feed him pachas mikashir spread over a period of time? So now Reb Chaim is turning the tables. He's saying, you know, you attack me from the Shulchan Aruch and you're saying, how can I be makil in the case of a chol on Yom Kippur? And I'm going to ask you the opposite question. Why is the Shulchan Aruch machmir if we have halacha of chol sheyesh bo sakana osim lo kol tzrochav? So laman achila, why do we have to feed him pachas mikashir? So Reb Chaim said the answer is that there are two, the halacha recognizes two categories of a chole. One is a chole sheyesh bo sakana, and the other category, which is represented by the prime cases, mu'uberes, is a pregnant woman. So the status of a pregnant woman, he says, is adayin eina besakana. Right now, presently, her life is not in balance. Ella she'im lo tochal, right, because what happened was she smelled some good food on Yom Kippur, im lo tochal, maybe if she doesn't eat, tavoli de sakana. Maybe at some point, her situation, her health will deteriorate to the point in which she'll come into sakana. When we came and she died lo bepochus mikashir, if we give a pochus mikashir, then she'll never become a cholish yesh bo sakana. Masha enken cholish u kfar misukan v'etzem, if you're already in a life-threatening situation, meaning if we don't save you, you're going to die. Then afa shulchan aruch modeh, the shulchan aruch would also be modeh that there's no din of pochus mikashir. And he said, take a look at the Shulchan Aruch and try to read his language. The Shulchan Aruch says, Chole shetzarech lechol im lo yachilenu is efshar sheyechabed olav hachole hacholi v'yistaken. So the Mechaber, even when he tells you to feed him pachas mikashir, he's talking about a chole who needs to eat. And if you don't feed him, it's possible that his situation will deteriorate and then it'll be in a life-threatening situation. Hare says Rav Chaim, lo medubar b'chol sheyesh bo sakana, ela im lo yochal, yovol lidei sakana. Perhaps if we don't feed him, it'll become a sakana. In such a case, it's dome l'muberes. It's not a chol sheyesh bo sakana. And therefore, Rav Chaim says that if you have a chol sheyesh bo sakana, forget about this halacha of me'uberes. So I think I told you, gentlemen, when my wife was pregnant, it was mamish before Yom Kippur, so I asked my Rebbe of Salvation whether she should fast or not. So he said, for sure she should fast. So I said, okay. And I was turning my back to leave. You know, I got my psak, what was I going to do? You know, with the Rav, you didn't start chatting with him about the weather. That was... So he said to me, but if she sees the following symptoms, and then goes into the whole thing, then have her eat. She has to eat on Yom Kippur. So I figured, you know what, let's see what kind of response I can get. So at this point I was kind of deliberately playing a game here. Today I regret it, I did it. But so I said to him, and Rebbe, should I feed her like it says in Shulchan Aruch, pachas pachas mikashir? He gets angry and he says, no, feed her kesuda shloma mel fishaito. You know, give her like Henry VIII, you know, give her a whole banquet. And he was angry with me, he was like, you know, frustrated that I even asked that question about focus with Kashir. Well, basically what he's saying is that her life is not in danger, she fasts. But if she sees certain symptoms, then already she's a chol sheyesh bo sakana. And then Reb Chaim says is hora that you have to feed her, you know, also what called sarcha, but there's no din of sakana. So this is an example. Reb Chaim took a strong stand on a halachic issue. He wasn't most of the issues he would send to Rav Rieger. Rav Rieger, Rav Sufa Zelig, he was the dayan in Brisk. And as I told you last time, that the reason why Rav Chaim didn't consider himself a posek is because he was afraid that if he would get involved in psak, he would probably argue with everybody and all the standard piskei halacha. And that's why you remember the case I told you about Rav Elchanan. Rav Yisrael Chanan, that he said to Rav Yisrael Chanan, just send me a telegram whether the get is kosher or not. Don't give me any explanations. Because he knew that if he would give me an explanation, Rav Chaim would disagree with him.
There's a logical problem there, right?
Is there? I didn't see it. Please
know,
don't.
If you know that the basis of something is something you wouldn't agree with, and you're just closing your eyes to it,
So that has to do with...
You never do that with medicine, that's for sure.
Yeah, that has to do with the way halacha is accepted by Klal Yisrael. Like very often the Gemara says, Puk Chazi Livra. Or, for example, the Gemara says, Kvar Hora Zaken. You know, there are many phrases in Chazal which indicate that, you know, Psak Halacha works according to some rules and regulations.
The Shmai.
Right, and not only that, it says in the mystical books that Los and Lovo, you know, we're going to paskin like Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai was sharpened the Beis Hillel, but there are certain rules and regulations by which this haskomas chazal, and once the chachamim agree, then the halacha goes that way. Now, if it was an issue that had to do with leadership or authority and how we face the goyim, for example, would, at those kind of conventions, Rav Chaim would stand up, he would take a stand. And he couldn't care less. You know, the emes was his. Rav Chaim lived a world of emes. But as far as psak halacha is concerned, there's certain methods of psak halacha.
And if it would come with an explanation, he wouldn't accept it, even though it's psak halacha. Right? If you said,
in which case? The case we get?
He told you, yes. So if it would come with an explanation, even though it's a psak, he would disagree.
He would have trouble accepting
it
because
have sleeping.
Yeah, he couldn't sleep with it, or he'd send back an answer to Rabbi Chanan, and it would be endless, you know.
That's the whole story of Tana Bechna. That's the whole Masechta. There are lots of new better than anybody else. But
well, no, that's
careful.
A little bit different. That's because Rabbi Loza was invoking Shamayim, you know, to prove, you know, the walls are going to move. So you think that since in the Bez and Shalmala, they paskin like Rabbi Loza. On that, the Gemara says, Lo b'Shamayim. I'm talking about something different. I'm talking about a case where Rabbi Chaim, with his halachic reasoning and his koach achidush, he came to a certain conclusion that was against the psak. I wouldn't call that Loba Shamayim. I mean, there's a certain resemblance, but it's not Loba Shamayim. Do you follow my point?
But I think we should say that Rabbi Loza the Svara was right. The right were against him. That's how that Loba
right.
Works.
No, that so you're right. Same it could be. I don't know if it. Rabbi Loza was not proving his point about the Tanish Shalach Noi based on logic. You know, he presented all his logical arguments, Rabbi Yeshua argued with him, and so forth. But then he starts invoking Shamayim, that in Bezen Shalmala, they paskin like me. And he proved it over and over and over again. Lo Shamayim. Even though, by the way, the Gemara says that the Malach Asharis claimed that the Torah belonged to them. Do you remember that famous Gemara? When Moshe made it all the Lamara. And then the responsibility fell on the shoulders of Moshe Rabbeinu to argue with them and disprove that they had the authority to interpret halacha. So there was at least a havamina that the Malachi Asharis have a superior position in interpreting the halacha to mortal man. But at the end of the day, Lo b'Shamayim, man will determine the halacha. And how exactly the halacha is determined is a whole set of rules and regulations. My Rebbe used to say, very interesting, we're getting off a little bit on a tangent, but if you don't mind, you know, the Rambam in his introduction to the Mishnah Torah, and also in one of his other writings in the Pirush HaMishnayos, he goes through, you know, generation by generation, the 40 generations from whom? From the original Tanoim, I don't remember, till Ravina Ravash. So the Rav once asked his father, Rav Moshe, why did the Rambam see himself as a historian? What compelled the Rambam in his Mishnah Torah to tell us the names of all the different Torahs? And not only that, the Meiri himself in his Pirush on Avos goes beyond those 40 generations. He actually traces the Chachamim up to his generation. Because the Rambam stopped with Ravina Rav Ashi. So Rav Moshe said that there's something called Chachmei HaMesorah. And my Nafkimina, the Nafkimina is tremendous because we don't have the ability to argue with the Chachmei HaMesorah. And the Rambam wanted to trace the Chachmei HaMesorah of those 40 Doros to tell you that within the 40 Doros they can argue one with the other. But after those 40 Doros, we can only argue with new issues that would come up in interpreting the Torah, but we can never undermine what was already determined by those Chachmei HaMesorah. Okay, I'm just mentioning to you that the way in which halacha, what we call normative halacha, psak halacha, evolves and how it's authoritative is a whole different thing. But again, there were certain issues in halacha which Reb Chaim felt that he had to take a stand on. And you know, he would go very far. Here's another example of Pikuach Nefesh, which Reb Chaim took a tremendous stand on. You know, the Russian government would very often conscript a young man to take him to the Russian army. And in one particular case, here's what happened. Ba lifnei Reb Chaim adam echad mi brisk, b'noshen is kabel litzava chole v'nimtzav beis cholim v'ir acheres. In other words, the government had already decided that he was fit to serve in the army. And now he is being hospitalized in a different city. Tomorrow is Shabbos, and what's going to happen is titkayem bikoret harofim ladun im mukshar hu litzava. V'shol le'inyan mutalo linsoa hayom ba'er b'leil Shabbos lishtadil l'shacharuhu. In other words, the father felt that if he would take a train to the nearby city or whatever, when the official governmental doctors would evaluate his son, he might be able to convince them that he's not, you know, because of this illness, he's not worthy to serve in the army. Rav Chaim lo chashav afilu l'rega. You know, he didn't hesitate for a moment. V'tziva olam sheyisa v'yasa kol ma sheviyodu l'hatzil espino. Even though it was Shabbos. And Rav Chaim understood that if a person would be taken, conscripted to the army, that's considered pikuach nefesh. Again, Rav was saying, not necessarily because he's going to fall in the battlefield, but because to be conscripted in the Russian army at that young age, very rarely were you able to maintain some sort of religious standard. And he writes, Be'enei anashim shayu ba'osal mamad, the spectators who saw Rav Chaim tamu, they were wondering, How could he paskin like that? So Reb Chaim turns to them and he says, "Im yitztarech bino shel ze la'avod chamesh shanim b'tzava, harei lo menanim nahu shebemeshach chamesh shanim." Okay. So I heard the story a little bit differently, but I'll tell you the way Rav Zevin tells the story. He says that Reb Chaim was worried about Svek Sveka of Pikuach Nefesh. That maybe during the 5 years of his service, he would be called to the front lines. Here's another case.
So we've been talking about the other svara that is Tertib Mvatl Shabbos Achat Kdeshishno Shabbos Eschabe. That's the concept.
Well, yeah. Well, the Gemara gives various reasons. One of those is that one, but the Torah says v'chai ben v'loshi yamos behem. So I'm not sure the maskana.
So the danger was his going off, you know, becoming mechal Shabbos. Is that pikuach nefesh?
Right. So there's a Ramah that says when they were threatening to take a girl for shmad, and the Ramah says you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos to prevent that. So that's what I thought Reb Chaim was referring to. Have you ever heard the word kantinistim?
Yeah.
Like the kantinistim, they were drafted for 25 years. So this is a different story. Then he tells the story in the first year of World War I, the Russians were in control of the city of Brisk, and they grabbed 5 Jews. And there was an alila, there was some sort of libel against these Jews, and Reb Chaim found out about it. So somebody whispered to Reb Chaim that if he gathers together 5,000 ruble, which was a massive sum of money, then perhaps they could, bakshish, they could bribe, they could ransom them. The problem was, it was during Aseret Yemei Teshuva leading up to Yom Kippur, Reb Chaim went from place to place in Brisk, and he couldn't gather together the sum of 5,000 rubles. So on Erev, you remember this? On Erev Yom Kippur, he notifies the shuls all over Brisk that no one's allowed to daven, they can't start Kol Nidre until he sends a shliach that says it's okay. And Reb Chaim personally escorted the shliach from one shul to the other, and he says, we're not going to start davening on Yom Kippur tonight. I mean, this is on the night of Yom Kippur until we raise the 5,000 rubles. And calls much takas yodi chavesh smurulim and zamanim, you know, no cash. Lo natir lispal. I'm not going to allow you to daven. This is the authority of Reb Chaim, and he said that Reb Chaim, in that case, demanded a certain sum from each one of the Gvirim, which reminds me of a story about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Colonel of Roth. My father told me that there was once a very pressing need, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe asked every chassid to write down on a piece of paper how much he's giving, how much he's contributing. And everyone gave the paper up to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe would look at the paper that had his name on it and a sum, and he would tell him whether or not that was enough. In some cases, he said, the Rebbe says, you're giving too much, you can't afford it. And in other cases, he said, you got to give double. You know? And here, Reb Chaim was telling the Gvirim exactly how much they have to give. Shekolzman shlo yiyah tachas yado, bekolzman lo yiten schum yadua, a certain specific sum, then they wouldn't daven on Yom Kippur. And then finally, at about midnight, that night of Yom Kippur, they gathered the sum, and Reb Chaim sent the shliach that they could daven. This is Reb Chaim on Pikuach Nefesh. Now another story he tells about Reb Chaim is that a lot of times Reb Chaim would say chidushim, and Reb Chaim was absolutely convinced that it was MS based on his analysis of the sugya. People would ask him a kasha, and sometimes, you know, Reb Chaim couldn't answer the kasha, but he would still say mishtapinish from a kasha. Ain't no the meisvahas kusha. You're not going to die from a kasha. And as Reb Chaim knew, he was convinced that what he said was MS. You have a kasha, we'll have to work it out, you know. But that was it. So what was in Reb Chaim's mind was gufa shel dvarim, and he knew that ultimately the truth would come out, and they'd be able to prove it. Now Reb Zevin has a section here about Tanakh, and he says that it's very fascinating to note that Reb Chaim had, you know, people think classically all Reb Chaim had his interest in was a black Gemara and a Rambam, but he said that even Tanakh was people don't realize was part of Reb Chaim's chidushim. Oh, so this is a famous Reb Chaim about the Akedah. I think we discussed this in the past, no? Do you remember that Chazal say that Avraham Avinu had two contradictory tzivuy, right? It said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ki Yitzchak Yikar Lecha Zara, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Lecha Leil Yolo. So Chazal say that, again, I don't want to go through the whole thing right now, but that Avraham Avinu did not ask a kasha. So what happened? So Reb Chaim says the following. He says, when the Malach came and said, Al Tishlach Yodcha, At that point, Avraham Avinu asked the Kasha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you told me Kachla is Bincha, right? And yet before that you told me Ki Yitzchak Yikolo Rav. Fine. Anyway, the punchline of this is the following: HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately is Miyashi the Stira, and he says, I never told you to be Makriv to Shech Yitzchak. I told you Haleu Sham. Now, in the Gemara, we usually assume that once you bring something onto the Mizbeach, there's a din of Shechita. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu never commanded him on the Shechita itself. He only commanded him to bring him on the Mizbeach. Meaning, Avraham Avinu understood that if he has to bring him on the Mizbeach, that therefore, like any kachin that goes on the Mizbeach, there's a din of Hakrova. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu never was mitzavim on the Hakrova, on the Shechita. So when the Malach says to Avraham Avinu, what's the language of the pasuk? Al Tishlach Yodcha Lanar. What it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that you were Makayim my mitzvah. My mitzvah was Halev. That you did. You were Malachim. Now you want to shecht him because the din and akrov on that you're honest. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to you not to shecht him. Askite viachte. Bring him up and take him down. So Reb Chaim asked, why does Avraham Avinu wait to ask his question till the Malach says to him, Al Tishlach Yodcha Lanar? You know, you told me Halev Sham Liola. Why didn't Avraham Avinu ask his kasha before that, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Kachas Yitzchok Halev Sham Liola? So this question Reb Chaim raised in the following context. In other words, at what point in history did the Chaim actually ask this question? And we'll get to the pages. Okay, I got caught up in this. He said that there was once a chassid that engaged Reb Chaim with a kind of an opposition. He says, "I don't understand, Reb Chaim. You're from the Misnagdim, and you're always being mefalpel in kashas. And us chassidim, we're not mefalpel in kashas. We whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, we do. We don't ask kashas." So that was his critique against the Misnagdim. So Reb Chaim said, "You're right to some extent. There are limitations, and there are situations where you're not allowed to ask a kasha. However, there are situations in which you do ask a kasha. And what determines whether you ask the kasha or you don't ask the kasha?" He says the following. In the Brisa of Rabbi Shmuel, it says, "Shnei ksuma machishim zedzeh, ad sheyova kosva shlishi v'achriya beineha." There's a kosva shlishi v'achriya, and until that kosva shlishi, ein lanu rishus lahakshos, al shnei ksum machishim zedzeh. It's ad sheyova kosva shlishi. It's not the yesh lahakshos, v'achar kach kosva shlishi. It's ad sheyova kosva shlishi. Ubekushos ke'elu ain't on oskin. He says we're not allowed to be osik in those kashas. Then we apply the principle of Xeris HaKosav, of Chukas HaTorah, and finally we'll find the Kosav HaShlishi. But before we find the Kosav HaShlishi, we don't ask the kashas. He says that on the other hand, after we have the Kosav HaShlishi, then we can ask kashas. HaTorah Atzma, the Torah itself is giving us a green light. Once it gives us the Kosav HaShlishi, Lachkar V'Lidrosh Al Shnei Ksuvim. In other words, through the Kosav HaShlishi, we can now go back to the original contradiction between the first two psukim and ask how we can now reconcile the contradiction. Kusha Kazu Higufa Shel Torah. That's an essential part of Torah. V'achas mi'amidosh haTorah nidreshes mi'hen. Right, so if you have Shnei Ksuvim HaMachishim says, and now you have the Kosav HaShlishi, now in the light of the Kosav HaShlishi, go back and answer and reconcile the first two Ksuvim, and that's Gufa Shel Torah. Lefichach, therefore, Kishe Avram Avinu Shoma Shnei Ksuvim HaMachishim says, Kibi Yitzchak Yikor L'Kosar and Kachlus Bincha Lo Shal V'Lo Hiksha. He had no kashas. Esmol, yesterday, the tzivui was kafaka, chayom. The tzivui is a different tzivui. Ubemufla mimcha al tidrosh. You have no right to ask kashas. But li'acher sheshoma kosav shlishi, when the malach came and he said, al tishlach yodcha lanar, haven, then Avram Avinu said, now he has a heter, urishus, lachkar v'lidros levarer, eich lachriu liyashiv esastira. And that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu clarified, askete achte.
So it's more informational, not in terms of what he should do. Now the party is over, he just wants to understand.
Correct. Now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a clear cut tzivui, don't shecht Yitzchak. What's the pasuk again? Al tishlach yodcha lanar. You're not letting even he wanted to give a little incision. Don't touch Yitzchak. Now he's got a final understanding of what he has to do. Oh, but wait a second. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to me, Haleir Shom Liola. So what happened to that tzivui? That's already Gufa Shel Torah. That's already a stira between two psukim. On the one hand, you told me Kibi Yitzchak Yikor L'Kol Torah. So how could you have told me Haleu Shel Liola? Now you're telling me Al Tishlach Yodcha Lanar. So I understand that we go back to the first tzivui. So what was the second tzivui? Now we have to understand the second tzivui. As long as Avraham Avinu got the second tzivui, which he couldn't, he definitely was baffled by the second tzivui. How can you tell me Halev Shom Liola, when you promised me Kibi Yitzchak Yikor L'Chazar, mom's the word. I can't ask that kasha. That's already Shnei Ksuvim HaMachishim Zetzer. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said originally, whatever. Now he said something different. But now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu already told him clearly that it's the Yitzchak Yikor L'Chazara, So Avraham Avinu said to himself, wait a minute, what do I do with the pasuk and the tzivui of Halev Sham Li'ola? So Chaim used this as an example of when you should ask a kasha and when you shouldn't ask a kasha. You want to understand God's ways? Enochinami, I'm a chassid just like you are. But tarnished, you know, we're not allowed to ask these kashas. But mufla mecha al tidrosh.
Where do we see that Avraham asked afterwards?
I didn't hear you. Where do we see?
Did Avraham ask afterwards?
I don't know. I didn't go through the whole thing. Okay, so let me go through the whole thing. I'm sorry. I was trying. You know, sometimes I'm interested in the punchline and not in the details. So let me just go through. Rashi quotes it in Chumash. Rashi says the following: that when the Malach came and said to him, "Al tishlach yodcha nar," Omalo Avraham. Efresh lefanecha esichasi. Esmal amateli kivi Yitzchaki kol chazara. Chazarta amateli kachnas bimcha. I'm quoting Rashi. Achshav ata omerli al tishlach yodcha lanar. So Reb Chaim asked, so if already Avraham is asking kashas, why is it achshav amateli al tishlach yodcha lanar? Omer lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo achal es brisi motzi sfosai lo ashanek shamayti lcho kach. So Reb Chaim asked, why did Avraham Avinu wait until the third tzivui of Al Tishlach Yodcha, when already after the second tzivui of Kachdos Bimcha, he could have said, Afarish Lecha Sichoso, I could have asked you the following kasha, etc., etc. Vada Yoda Avraham Avinu Yofesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lo Tzivo El Aloso Li'ola Bilvad. Avraham Avinu understood that he was asked to bring him as an Ola. But Avraham Avinu understood those are the dinim of the Karbon. Is therefore, what's the difference between im nitztav lechatchil l'shachto or im nischayv l'shachto makmas din karbon sh'olav? Then this is what perplexed the mind of Avraham Avinu. In Avraham Avinu's mind, the tzivui itself included the shechita. Why? Because the law is that once you
be magdish.
Yeah, what's the language here? Once you magdish the olah, like you said, Daniel, then immediately the din of the karbon is lishachet. So what difference does it make whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chatchil told him to shecht Yitzchak or whether he gave him a din of a karbon and he said bring him on as an ola? And the answer is that Onus Rachmana Patre, says Reb Chaim, could apply in the second din. In other words, not in the tzivui. In the tzivui, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now removing the tzivui. What's going on here? Hayevdel hu she'ilu nikra. If something would prevent him from actually implementing the tzivui, if it's tavala shchita, if he would have gotten lehedja a tziva in the shchita, is then lokiyam as a mitzvah. He really never fulfilled the mitzvah. You can call him onus, but he never fulfilled the mitzvah. But if all HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from him is to bring and be magnish Yitzchak as an ola, then if he cannot fulfill the din of the Ola, on that you could say that on the one hand Avraham Avinu was Makayim the mitzvah, but on the other hand he's honest as far as that din that's in the Chefzah Shel Karbon, so to speak. I'm just adding that thing. Okay, so at this point, you know, what page do you have again?
78.
So what I read to you today is on page 67. On page 68, Reb Chaim, again, on page 67, he has a whole shtickel Torah on a parsha in Melachim, Perek Aleph, Mishnah's, Perek Zion, with Shmuel and David. Okay, we'll leave that out for now. But on page 68, I just wanted to point out to you, because this I heard from my Rebbe in a slightly different version, Reb Chaim's insight into a parasha in Zechariah Novi, which we read on Shabbos Chanukah. Every Chanukah. You know, sometimes there's another There's another Haftorah from Shlomo HaMelech. That's if there are two Shabbos Zechariah. But every Chanukah we always read a Parshin Zechariah. And Reb Chaim points out that the Parshin Zechariah that we read in Haftorah for Shabbos Zechariah is very, very Peledic. Because Zechariah sees a vision. The Malach asks him, what vision did you see in your Nevuah? Ra'isi menoras zav u'shnei zesim aleha. And then Zechariah turns to the Navi and he says, Va'omar el hamalach adovrbi ma'ela adoni. What am I looking at? Vayan, and the Malach answers, Va'yomar halo yadata ma'hema. Va'yomar lo adoni. Back and forth. So Reb Chaim asks a few questions here. Now, the end of the Nevuah, before I get to Reb Chaim's two questions, is Vayomer Eli Lemar Lo B'chayel Lo B'kokiim Baruchi Amar Hashem Tzvakot. So the whole parsha is just... So Reb Chaim asks two questions. First of all, what kind of debate is this between the Navi and the Malach? The Malach says he knows what he's looking at. The Navi says he doesn't know what he's looking at. L'chora, you know, when a Malach says something, that has significance. It's almost Nevuah. Maybe it is Nevuah. I don't know. So how can the Malach say he does understand what he's seeing and Zechariah says he doesn't understand what he's seeing? Secondly, what's the Ma lo b'chayav lo b'koach? Well, how does that answer the problem? Now, what I heard from the Rav is a third question that Reb Chaim asked, namely, where do we find in Tanakh a Navi who doesn't understand what he's looking at? Well, he's seeing a vision, so what's the purpose of the vision? No, I don't know what it's all about.
It's normal of a Navi, except for Moshe, doesn't see through...
Correct, but even though he doesn't see Aspaklari and Meir, but he knows, otherwise what's the point of the Navi, you know? So if Chaim said that the way to understand this is through a Rambam in Hilchus Beis HaBechira, we paskin that Kiddusha Rishona Kitchel Shaita V'lo Kitchel Asid Lava. So it means one, when Nebuchadnezzar came in and he took over the land, then the Kiddusha was completely nullified. But Kiddusha Shnia, which is called Kiddushas Ezra, Oli Bavel, is Kitchel Shaita V'lo Kitchel Asid Lava. I'm sorry, Mekitchel Asid Lava. So the Rambam asks, what's the difference? So the Rambam says the first Kiddusha was engendered by Kibush. And once that kibush was gone, it's batla kibush, it's batla kedusha. But the second kedusha was engendered by hisyashmus, by living in the land. What's the Rambam's language? Chazaka is the Rambam's language. And chazaka is not batel, even when the Romans came in and the Nebuchadnezzar and the Titus and all that stuff. Oh. So Reb Chaim wants to use this Rambam to explain the following. Zechariah lived between Churban Bayis Rishon and the building of Bayis Sheni. So the Nevuah that he was being shown was a picture, a vision of Bayis Sheni. Now Chazal in the Gemara in Yuma, a very famous Gemara, tells us that there were five differences between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. In all five cases it goes down, meaning that there are five things that existed in Bayis Rishon that were lost in Bayis Sheni. And amongst the things that were lost is the Shemen HaMishcha. The Shemen HaMishcha was used both for the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. Now, Zechariah is taking a look at Bayis Sheni, and he's seeing Shnei Zesim, and the oil is dripping from the Shnei Zesim. And Rashi says in his Pirush on Zechariah, based on Chazal, that these Shnei Zesim represent the Shemen HaMishcha of the Melech and the Shemen HaMishcha of the Kohen Gadol. Now what's going on? In Bayis Sheni there was no Shemen HaMishcha at all. It was already Ganuz at the time of Yoshiyahu. So the Kohen Gadol of Bayis Sheni was Merubah Begadim, but he was not Moshua, the Melech. There was no Melech during Bayis Sheni. Remember that? You have to know what the status of the Chashmonai was. But anyway, there was certainly no Mashiach of a Melech during Bayis Sheni. So this was the debate going on between the Malach and Zechariah. Zechariah couldn't figure out what's this vision of Shnei Zesim. He knew that the Shemen of Mishkan had already been put away, was gone, was by Yoshua Melech. Oh. So the answer is that there was one chiddush that Zechariah didn't know that could explain what the Shnei Zesim are all about. And what's that? That since the Kiddusha of Ezra is not betela, he nimsheches gamli osid lava, meaning the third base on Migdash is basically, that's what I heard from the Rav, Rav Zedek doesn't have this line, but the third base on Migdash is an extension of the second base on Migdash, meaning the basic Kiddusha exists, it's not bata. The only difference is that osid lava, when we establish the third Migdash, yia Shemen HaMishka, there will be Shemen HaMishka. Lachain, therefore, in this Nevuah, Herulo, Shnei B'nei Yitzhar, meaning these oils that are coming out from the two Zesim, Liasid Lavo, Zechariah, Lo Yoda Michidish Zeshik Dusha Zu, Tia Belo Kibush. He thought with Zechariah that the second Kedusha would be identical to the first Kedusha, namely, it would be established through Kibush. And therefore he thought it would be Bata. And therefore there's no relation between the ultimate Bayesh Lishi and Bayesh Sheni, because the Kedusha Bayesh Sheni would be Betela. What he didn't know was that this Rambam, that the second Beis HaMikdash and the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael at that time would be established through Chazaka, and therefore Liolam Lo Tisbata Kedusha Shliya Kitcha Liyasid Lola. Lachem, Hu Haven V'yada She Shnei Azesim Meramzim L'Shemen HaMishka, meaning the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. Then therefore, but since he didn't understand, even though he understood the remez and what the nevuah, the content of the nevuah, but he felt that history would not be able to bear out this nevuah. It's impossible because there would be no Shemen HaMishka, and therefore Amar LaMalach, he tells him out Eino Mavin. He doesn't understand Ma Inyanam LeBayis Sheni. What's the relation between the Shemen HaMishka and the Bayis Sheni, she'ein the Bayis Sheni Shemen HaMishka klal. The Im Liyasid Lavo, and if this vision is a vision of Bayis Shlishi, harin itztarich oz kiddush michadash, we'll need a whole new kiddush, which means that's not the nevuah of Zechariah. Zechariah is not in a historical pivotal position to have a kiddush of Bayis Sheni. Excuse me, of Bayis Shlishi. He's only in the position of kiddush Bayis Sheni. And by Sheni is going to be a kedusha that's betela. That's what Zechariah su. Al zeh heishiv lo amalach lo b'chayav lo b'kach ki meruchi lo b'chayav lo b'kach. Meaning the second base of Migdash is not going to come through chayel and kach, meaning through melchama and kibush. Kibush zeh lo yel yidei kibush melchama. Lachem lo tisbatel a kedusha zu liolam v'timashek ad liyosid lavo v'oz yiyah shnei b'nei yitzhar. And then we'll have the Shemen HaMishka from both. So basically what Zechariah didn't understand was that the Bayis Shlishi is the continuation of the Bayis Sheni. It's all one continuous Kiddush. You don't need a new Kiddush. And therefore any vision that he has of Bayis Sheni encompasses within it even Bayis Shlishi. And even though during the period of Bayis Sheni Lamaisa, during, what is it, 420 years if I remember correctly, there won't be Shemen HaMishka, that was already Ganuz, but the Shemen HaMishka will be revealed not with the raiders of the lost ark, but it will be revealed at the time of Mashiach. Okay, nobody understood the remnant, so that's good. You're all kedoshim and tahorim. Then he goes on to tell other stories about how Reb Chaim understood Tanakh. But let's leave that for now. He has some beautiful stories about Reb Chaim. Maybe if you're interested, you know, we'll talk about some of them. But now I want to talk to you about the Brisker Rav, and that's on page 78. So he says the following. The Brisker Rav did not give shiurim, but rather he gave what he calls here sichot taraniot, which means lama lenin dem sugyot. Let's learn the sugyot. Other magidei shiurim and Rosh Hashiv used to say a shiur. What it meant by shiur was that you prepared Mar Makomis with 50 different sugyas, and then with one yisoid, you were friend for all the different sugyas. That wasn't the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav was interested in Talmidim that wanted to learn the sugya with them, and he would learn together with them from the beginning of the Masechta till the end. And he gathered around him some of the most outstanding students, especially students who had an interest in learning
Kachim,
exactly. And what they would do is, every sugya they would learn in and of itself. Sometimes they would learn a sugya for a long period of time until they felt they understood it. And he says the following, that on the one hand, a shir is a lot longer than sitting down and learning a sugya, because a shir would quote from so many different sources and exhaust the whole topic. But on the other hand, Rav Velva's learning was very marik, very long, because as I said, you know, he would want to learn through a sugya from all perspectives, and it was mostly local. In other words, he wasn't interested in other sugyas and asking kashas here, kashas here. Let's build it up from the beginning. He says, "Ein Rav Velva nitznas v'vikuchim lo meneshu eino oev l'shmoa es atzad shel kenegdo u'eino misfakech afilu v'atzmo." In other words, he didn't see the negative, you know, the kashas and argue with someone. That wasn't in his time framework. You know, he was interested in understanding the sugya, and therefore he mafarish the sugya bez beirim b'dvar mameirim v'samchim mitzad atzmo. Okay. He gives an example of Rav Velvel here in the main paragraph on page 79, which is the last paragraph. And this is based on a sugya in Masechet Avodah Zarah. He tells it's on Nun Beis. And it has to do with a king called Achaz. And he would take away kelim that belonged to Hegdesh, and he would designate them for Avodah Zarah. And not all our malachim was so, you know, had such great CVs. So the Gemara wants to know, what's the status of this act of Me'ila when the king Achaz misappropriates the kelim? So there are two sugyas that seem to contradict one another. In one sugya, which is here in Avodah Zarah Nun Beis, the Gemara says, "Knasu shekonsu li'osra." As they gave a din or status of Avodah Zarah to these kelim, mitzad knas, knas de rabbanon. Minatora lo neser also kelim. Why? Because we have a principle, ein adam osa davar she'eino shalom. Again, you have to know the me'ilat side, because if it's me'ilat, it's mischalil, and then he could engender an iser of avodah zarah. But let's assume now it's eino mischalil for whatever reason, and now we have a principle of ein adam osa davar she'eino shalom. So this belongs to Hegdesh, and he cannot engender the Isra of Avodah Zarah, but they made a knas. In another sugya, which he quotes from Daf Nundalit, this is two blot later, the Gemara says, Nesru, that these kelim were awesome, Mishum shal yidei maisa, Adam oser af dover shein shalom. So there's a lot of pilpul here amongst the Achronim, how to reconcile these two sugyas, because if you do a maisa, and the maisa is done on an object, even if this object belongs to someone else, the power of the maisa is to engender an iser. Again, I'm not holding an avodah zarah, so don't ask me any questions. But that's what he just wants to use Revelvel's response and to be miyashi this to explain, to use it as a paradigm of Revelvel's derech alim. He says the following. He says that some Rishonim say that these two sugyas contradict each other. That's what we call sugyas chalukos. They represent two different opinions. And other Rishonim say we'll come up with an answer to be miyashiv this theory. Rav Velvel says that what we're talking about in these two sugyas are two forms of avodah zarah. There's one form of idol worship which is called meshamshei avodah zarah. And there's another form of idol worship, which is tikrovis avodah zarah. In other words, tikrovis avodah zarah means when you take an object and you bring it as an idol worship. Meshamshei avodah zarah means you have an idol and you designate an object to serve the idol, meaning to function as a secondary aid, so to speak, to the idol. You know, let's say, for example, you have a hat or gloves or a stick and you put it in the hands of the idol. That's called Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. Now, when the Gemara talks about Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo B'maisa, that's a reference to Tikrovas Avodah Zarah. So if Reuven abscads with something that belongs to Shimon and he uses it in idol worship itself, that's called Tikrovas Avodah Zarah, that he could ask it even though it belongs to someone else. Then you have Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. There, Ein Maisa HaPoel, there's not an act that engenders the Shema Avodah Zarah with all these surim. Ela Sha'al Yidei Zeh, as a result of using this object as a Mishamshei Avodah Zarah, Chal Al Hadover Shem Mishamshim. Notice whatever Yisurim apply, it's because your action engenders a shame, some sort of halachic status or category, on the Mishamshim. Ha'isur ba lomi etzem ha'maisa ela mipas ha'yos olav shem mishamish. I'll come back to this in just a sec because I want to give you a beautiful example of this from Rav Chaim Lufi Anistai Timamish. Two drops of water. He says the following: the kelov shall achaz, those kelim that were misappropriated by achaz, hayu mishamshim lavodah zarah. They weren't tikrovas avodah zarah, rather mishamshim lavodah zarah. Is therefore the first sugyan avodah zarah ein makom lomer shall yidei maisa ha'adam. Right? It wasn't Tikrovas Avodah Zarah, it was only Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. The Isra Avodah Zarah is a result of the fact that this object is designated as a Mishamish of Avodah Zarah. Lachain, therefore the Gemara had to come up with some other explanation as to why the Kalim that were taken by Achaz for Avodah Zarah were not Asur Mi'ikar Adin, meaning Doraisa, because Ein Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo. Because again, he didn't do a Maisa of Tikrovas. The only time we apply the principle of Maisa Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo is in Tikrovas. Here he only used it for what? For Mishamshim. Are you following? Lachain, Hutzuchu Lomar, the Gemara had to come up with some explanation as to why these Kalim are Oser. Knasim Shekonsu Chachamim. Oh, so what do we do now with the Gemara? The Gemara says, Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo. The answer is, move on me'elav, haknas. Why do we institute a punishment, a penalty? Every penalty is slapped down upon a person because of some action that he did. And the action that he did, Achaz, in this case, by taking these Kalim of Hegdesh, is Nishtam She'bahem L'Avodah Zarah. Oh, but that mice itself is not enough inherently to generate the Isur that to Dover She'enu Shalo and Hegdesh that doesn't belong to him. Because he only did an act of designating for a Mishamshei Avodah Zarah. Ah, so then we have to say that as a result of his action, he was penalized. And Knas Zeh, they slapped him with this Knas, and that's the Sugya that says Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo Yidei Maisa. So the Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo Yidei Maisa means the Al Yidei Maisa for which they instituted the Knas. That's when you could ask for somebody else's object. So again, let's just go over it one more time. The first sugya was pointing out that this could not be an Iser Me'ikar Adin. Why? Because since it was Mishamshim, it's not the Maisa that generates the Iser of Mishamshim, but rather the shame Mishamish. In the other sugi, the Gemara says, Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo. The Gemara means that as a result of this Knas, the Rabbanan are going to, I'm sorry, as a result of the Maisa that he did, the Rabbanan are going to Aser the Mishamshim, even though they don't belong to. Notice the Rabbanan are using the framework of the Torah, of Adam Oser Dover She'enu Shalo Yidei Maisa, to institute their Knas. I just wanted to point out that this concept that the Maisa doesn't generate the Iser, but rather shame generates the Iser, this I heard from the Rav in a different context in the name of Reb Chaim. The halacha is that Eid Zomen, this one of the Al-Kagams, is Mikanula Abahu Nifsal, like Abaye. So the Rav asked the obvious question. How could Abai say Mikanula Habu Nifsal? Since the Torah says you believe the second pair of Edom and the first pair of Edom perjure themselves. Now at that moment that they perjure themselves, again we didn't know it yet, but they were psuli Edom. So how can you be machshir all the Edom in between? So one day in the Gemara is that Abai is based on what's called Pseidu Lekukus. It's a Takonis Chazal. But the Gemara has an Ibai saying that Abai is based on another principle called Eilecha Bo El Mishas Chidusha V'Eilech. So what does that mean? So the Rav said that we really don't know which pair of Edom are telling the truth. The first pair, the second pair, it's basically Trey and Trey. But the Torah is Mechadish that we listen to the second pair of Edom. What does that mean? That the Shem Eid Zomen passels the Eid Zomen. And the Shem Eid Zomen only emerges with the second pair of Edom. If we would believe the second pair of Edom and know that they're telling the truth, then the Maisa HaGodes Edus, when the first pair of Edom purging themselves, that would be the Maisa that generates the Psul Edus. But since we don't really know, then the Torah is Mechadish considered as if the first pair of Edom are Psulim. So at what point in time does the Torah slap down the Shem Eid Zomem only because the Edom, only from the time that the second pair of Edom come in? I'm just using this as an illustration of what I think, you know, Rav Velva got a derech halim from his father, Rav Chaim, which is exactly what Rav Zevin wants to do in the next five pages, some of which you have, is to prove, to illustrate that Rav Velva really took the ball and ran with it. In other words, he received from his father a derech halim.
I think you told us this one about 6 months ago, Shame and Tzius, I can't remember who it was.
Shame and Tzius is a little bit different, but maybe it's related also. In other words, the Torah is not telling you that b'mitzius the first pair of Edom purged themselves. That we don't know. But the Torah is saying that there's such a thing as a din, and that din is mechayish a new shame Eid Zomen. I mean, Reb Chaim had other proofs for this, but that's the part that I remember. He adds another piece here, Reb Zev, and he says b'derech hilucho, meaning as Reb Velvel is on the way, you know. By the by, he's Mavliya Rai Yofel Chidusha. There's a halacha called Muktzal Avodah Zarah. Now, I didn't get a chance to look up this Gemara. He says to look in the Rambam. If you have a Rambam here, Yisurim is Be'ach. That would be exciting. The Rambam says that Muktzal Avodah Zarah Eino El Al Yedei Maisa. It's not enough to make a verbal designation and say this is designated for Avodah Zarah. You have to do some sort of mice designated. Oh, thank you, John. The Aval Dichen Ein Adam Makse Behemas Chavero. So the question is obvious. If you have an animal and someone else does a mice to be mocked to the animal to designate it for Avodah Zarah, Sam, you want to do me a big favor? If you could open up the Yisurim Mizbeach, Perek Dalet Halacha Hey, because I'm curious to know what the example of a Maisa is.
They have to come and be Makdish your somebody else's behemoth?
Right? Just like you can't be Makdish someone else's behemoth, you can't be mocked to someone else's behemoth, even if you do a Maisa. So the question that Reb Chaim was, that Reb Velvel in this case was bothered by is, since the whole din of Muktzal Avodah Zarah is Al Yedei Maisa, and we just established in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that Adam Osa Dover Shein Shal Al Yedei Maisa, is why is the Halacha Eino the Maksa Behemas Chavera? Why is that so? If the Rambam says, we have to see the Rambam in Yisurim Yisbeh Perek Dal Halacha Hei, that ain't all the maksa double of odesora el al yidei maisa. Then I should be able to be maksa your behema, because now we say adam osir double shein shel al yidei maisa. Says Rav Velva, no. What the Gemara meant to say is that it's not the maisa aktsa that's the osir, but rather the shame muktsa that's the osir. And when is the shame mutzah chal on the behema? Through a maisa. Right? But the maisa that he did, again, we have to see exactly the case of what the maisa is. That doesn't engender the shame mukta. It's the shame maisa. Yeah, what did you find here? Do we find anywhere?
Raveya and makta.
Oh, interesting. A roveya v'nir v'bein shayisa v'bein v'shalo v'bein shayisa shalcha v'ero v'bein harizu asur l'mizbeach aval ha-mukta im ha-yeh shalo v'hikta kodem sheyagdish nifsal. Hiksa shalcha v'ero. No, that's not the right one. Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about being makta something that's not shalcha v'ero.
Right. But we're looking for a different halacha that Adam makta lavodazar yidei maisa. He doesn't tell you where that is. 61. I don't know. There's something
makta of somebody else.
Even your own. He's saying that you need a maisa. I don't know where this Rambam is. I don't see it offhand. I will have to stop here. But if you could do me a favor, on page 80, if you could make a little note that we want to start tomorrow in the main paragraph on page 80. Okay, then? Now, some of this... Wow, this is so profound. You really have to be holding in kutchin for this. I always say if I come back in another life, I'll learn kutchin. So we'll see. It gets a little bit easier on page 81, even though that's also kutchin, but it gets a little bit easier. Page 82 is about Kriyas HaMegillah, not really Kriyas HaMegillah, but about writing the Megillah. So we'll get to that. That'll be a little easier. And you have up to page 83, inclusive?
Yeah,
okay, good. So 83 is very, very shy to us. That's really the last track of the song.
85, all the way through.
Oh, you're going to have 85. Great. I don't remember what I was able to photocopy. By the way, to get two pages on one sheet, I had to shrink it a little bit. So I hope you're able to read it. I only shrunk it by 10%. And yet it was able to fit it. Because this way I get both sides of the page. Alright then? I wish everyone a great day, and hopefully we'll finish this piece of the Brisker Rub tomorrow. Believe it. Alright then?
Let's make a comment to the map about the Akedah.
Yeah, the Akedah was 66. Back on page 66. 66. 66.